Welcome to the Accenture MIT podcast series. Here's Daniel Jackson, professor of computer science at MIT.
In my last podcast, we talked about the idea of representation independence and how it applies to integers in a programming language. In short, here's the idea again. The programming language offers a data type, called int, say, with some set of operators such as addition, subtraction, and multiplication. From your point of view as a programmer, it's as if the machine actually supports the same kind of simple integers you first learned about in elementary school. You can ignore the fact that the machine can't actually manipulate integers directly at all, and that the compiler has to play all kinds of tricks to maintain this illusion. Where's the representation independence here? It's that what the programmer does, how she uses integers in her programs, is completely independent of how they're represented in memory. And if that changes, for example, because the compiler is modified or the program ported to a different machine, the programmer doesn't even need to know. Aside from integers, programming languages give you other data types too, typically real numbers, booleans, characters, enumerations, and composite types too, such as records and unions. Different languages extended the repertoire in different ways. Pascal includes sets. Functional languages such as Lisp, and much later Scheme, ML, and Haskell, give you lists. Snowball gives you strings. APL and MATLAB give you matrices, and so on. Spreadsheet languages, such as Excel and Numbers, give you more domain-specific data types, such as dates and currency. In the 1970s, researchers noted that it was strange to expect the designer of a language to anticipate all the data types a programmer would need. Why not just allow the programmer to extend the set of data types with new ones? This question raised another question. What exactly is a data type? And from here, the idea of abstract data types was invented. You might just say that a data type is a collection of values and some operations you can apply to combine and compare them. By this definition, you can make new data types in almost any language, so long as you have some constructors, such as records and arrays, for building composite types. For example, if you have arrays and characters, you can make strings, and if you have lists, you can make sets. But the data types you can make this way are not like the built-in types. Here's why. If you make strings from arrays of characters, for example, you might allow a programmer to use array notation to obtain the ith character of a string. And to notice the end of the string, you might stick a special null character in, so that the programmer can iterate through the characters and know when to stop. Now imagine you're a compiler writer, and you can figure out a better way of representing strings. For example, you might decide that if you knew the length of a string in advance, you could make operations on it faster. So you'd like to reserve the first element of the array for the size of the string, and dispense with the need for the null terminator. Well, you can't make this change because of all the code that has been written, assuming that the first character of the string is stored in the first element of the array. Ouch! The problem here, of course, is a lack of representation independence, something by now you're becoming a bit of an expert on. What we need, then, is a way to allow the programmer to define data types in a representation-independent way. This is what abstract data types are. Instead of defining the type by its representation, you define it instead by its operations. So instead of saying that an integer is a bit string, interpreted in a special way, I just tell you that integers are things you can add, subtract, and multiply, and so on, and compare using equality less than, and so on. In other words, rather than attempting to describe what a type is, I tell you what you can do with it. So a string is something you can search for a character in, or concatenate with another string, or take a prefix of, etc. How do you make this work in practice? You extend the programming language with a special kind of module that allows you to define a data type by giving a representation, in terms of existing types, along with a set of operations. Roughly speaking, the operations can be just plain old procedures. The important thing is that the code that uses the data type, which is often referred to as a client of the type, must be prevented from being able to access the representation. There are many ways to do this. The most elegant, perhaps, is to treat the declaration of the representation as introducing a name for the new type that has different meanings inside and outside the module. Inside the module, the name refers to the composite representation. Outside, it refers to an abstract type, a type whose representation is unknown, and on which only the type's declared operations can be called. Take our string example. Inside the module implementing strings, we might declare a string to be an array of characters. Outside the module, a string has no structure, and all you can do with it is call the declared operations. Suppose you call the operation that gets the ith character of the string. That operation is declared inside the module, so it sees a string as an array, and can ask for the ith element of the array. Now we have real representation independence. And if we organize all our data types like this, we'll be able to modify their representations without changing any of the client code. Most modern programming languages provide this so-called data abstraction feature, allowing you to define your own abstract data types. Many programmers are confused and think this is what object-oriented programming is, but that's really a different thing. It's true that object-oriented languages tend to support data abstraction, but a class is not necessarily an abstract data type. And there are languages such as Clue, Standard ML, and Modular 3 that provide abstract data types but are not object-oriented. An object is a chunk of data that carries its operations around with it. In an object-oriented language, when you call an operation, the code for the operation is found by taking the class of the object and looking in that class for an operation with the appropriate name. In an abstract data type language, when you call an operation, you have to give the name of the module as well. This has some important advantages. Object-oriented languages are convenient when operations are unary, that is, they take one value of the type. But for operations that are binary, such as string concatenation, the object-oriented paradigm isn't so good, and the fact that the first argument, the so-called receiver object, gets special treatment, creates all kinds of trouble. If you're writing a program in an object-oriented language, such as Java or C#, you can make a class an abstract data type, but only if you follow a careful discipline. Make sure to declare every field as private to prevent clients from accessing the representation directly. And be careful not to pass references to or copies of the representation in or out. For example, if you implemented a nice string data type as an array of characters, you'd better not provide an operation that returns the array directly to a client. This is often a tempting thing to do when the client wants to iterate, for example, over the characters in a string. And unfortunately, it's made even more tempting in Java because writing iterations over structures is made more difficult than it needs to be, since Java doesn't have the constructs that make it easy, such as Clue-style iterators, as found in Ruby, for example. Even with abstract data types, there's still one big difference that remains between the built-in types and the ones programmers define for themselves. The built-in types, such as integers, characters, and booleans, are immutable, which means that the value of an object doesn't change over time. The integer called 3, for example, is always 1 less than 4 and 1 more than 2. Some abstract types are immutable. Strings in Java, for example, are immutable. You can't add a character to a string. You can only create a new string consisting of the old string plus that character. But some abstract types aren't immutable. A famous example is Java's date type, which should have been immutable but isn't. This means you can put a date in an object, for example, the birth date of an employee, and go back later and find that it's changed. This creates lots of opportunities for obscure bugs. To learn more about immutability and why it's a good idea, you might want to listen to a podcast I made last year on the subject. In this podcast, we've been talking about how to make sure that all the values of a type are accessed only within a special module. But what if you want to send objects from one program to another? That will be the subject of my next podcast.
Copyright 2010, Daniel Jackson. Music copyright 2010, Chris Bremer from pianosociety.com.